People assume that time is a strict progression of cause to effect, but actually, from a non-linear, non-subjective viewpoint, it's more like a big ball of wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey stuff.
No way!
Yes way!
It worked. It really worked. They said I was mad, but it worked.
Oh, no, not Morlocks! Not flesh-eating Morlocks!
Sheldon, are you okay?
We have to get rid of the time machine.
This is a little big for the living room, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the problem. It's too big.
I'm glad you agree. I hired some guys to help us move it. Come on in, fellas.
Oh, no. More locks. Eat him. Eat him. Ah!
This is the SF Signal Podcast, as powered by the Functional Nerds. My name is Patrick Hester. I'm an author, a blogger, and an all-around functional nerd. And tonight, I've assembled a bunch of folks to talk about time travel. So let's go down the list here and say hello to John DiNardo.
Hi, folks. John DiNardo here, resident blogger at SF Signal.
Next up, Miss Gail Carriger.
Hi there. Gail Carriger here, and I'm an author.
You are. A good one, too.
Oh, thank you very much.
And Mr. Paul Weimer.
Hi, Paul Weimer here. I contribute to SF Signal, the Functional Nerds, and I am not my own grandpa.
That's funny. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, this is Carrie Quinn. I contribute to SF Signal on these podcasts and to Functional Nerds, and I write science fiction.
And last but certainly not least, sacrificing tickets to Harold and Kumar's Christmas 3D Spectacular is Mr. Derek Austin Johnson.
Hi. Derek Austin Johnson. I write a column called Watching the Future, which deals with science fiction media. I'm also the resident film critic for SF Signal, and also write for Moving Pictures, and I write other fiction.
Very cool. Well, tonight I wanted to talk about time travel, which has been a popular part of science fiction for a very long time. When you look back, you see the H.G. Wells, Mark Twain, Heinlein, Lewis, Jones, Bradbury, Asimov, Ellison, Butler, Turtelove, and Willis have all written stories that involve time travel in some form. It's very popular on television, where Star Trek did it, Quantum Leap did it. You had the Time Tunnel in Voyagers, to name just a few. As a trope or plot point, is time travel overused in sci-fi today? Let's start with Paul.
No, I don't think time travel is an overused trope. I think it's one of the core tropes of science fiction. It allows the themes of science fiction, that is, to show a lens on our own society by showing it a different time or place to be fully exercised. And there's plenty of good time travel, both time travel in the sense of going to a different spot in time, be the future or the past, and those rare and beautiful stories which actually use time travel as an element and an activity rather than just moving to point A and seeing the stuff there. Like the most recent seasons of Doctor Who, for example, or a story like, say, By His Bootstraps by Heinlein, actually use time travel in clever and interesting ways. And that's the time travel I really like the most, when time travel is not just a way to get to a spot in history, but where it's an actual element that can be manipulated by the characters.
Carrie?
I love time travel. What I love about it is that, like Paul said, you can use it to take a character from one time, put it in another time, and have that contrast between the characters. But there's different ways to do time travel, and it's not just seen in science fiction. It's seen in a lot of different genres. I was thinking of The Time Traveler's Wife, mm-hmm. which was a very popular mm-hmm. novel a couple years ago. And in that particular case, it was a genetic disorder. The guy couldn't help himself. He kept popping in and out of his own timeline. And he didn't have a machine. He didn't have any control over it. And he wasn't going hugely out of his own time. He was just contrasting different parts of his own life. And so I think that the idea of time travel is still one that can be done in a really interesting way.
But wasn't that really just a complete and total ripoff of Wesley Crusher's character on Next Generation?
No.
Oh. What about that weird alien guy?
Weird alien guy? You have to be a little more specific.
The Traveler, the one who was teaching him all about the time travel, bopping in and out and all that kind of crap.
Well, again, the character from Time Traveler's Wife has no control over it. It's a genetic disorder. He actually passes it on to his daughter.
Oh, gotcha. So he can't learn to control it.
No, there's no point at which he has any control of it. And ultimately, bad things happen to him because of it. But on the other hand, he also meets his wife because of it. So it's sort of a look at, if you knew that you were going to have this end, but you wouldn't have this life if you got rid of it, would you still have the life that you were going to have? And, you know, there's a lot of different ideas that it plays with within the structure of time travel.
Gotcha. I understand now. John DiNardo completely disagrees with you. Go ahead, John.
I kind of agree, although I think it's less overused in literature than it is in television.
In television, it's always you got to fix something.
Well, with certain exceptions, right? With, you know, Quantum Leap, that, you know, they can kind of be given a free pass. Time Tunnel, they can be given, you know, I mean, that's the basis of their show. But, you know, after a while, whenever they went back into the past on, you know, any version of Star Trek, you know, it started eliciting eye rolls, right? Just seemed like the go-to plot point that they do. Oh, let's sling them back into the past. This time we'll do it with Joan Collins. Hey, you know, it's I think it's more overused.
Joan Collins is a perfectly reasonable reason to go backwards in time. So,
I think it's harder to really deal with a lot of the issues around time travel in a 60-minute episode.
Gail?
I tend to agree with a lot of what people have said, and I think that when time travel is done well, one of the most interesting things about it is when people veer off from sort of the standard tropes. And for example, I'm thinking about a book by Jenny Wirtz that's called The Sorcerer's Legacy, where she has two different times, but they're both fantasy worlds. So she plays with time travel, but in a sort of a completely fictional way. And I thought that was a really interesting and novel approach. And I'd like to see more things like that turn up in other medias. But I agree, it does tend to be that the best time travel for me is literary.
I'm trying to think of Jenny. I think I've got some of her books upstairs. I'm trying to remember which books I have. Anyway, I got distracted. Derek.
Actually, it's probably safe to say it's one of the most overused tropes, to the point where I don't think it's used very much these days. It doesn't seem to be, at least. The last time travel story that sticks in my head from the last, I'd say, 5 years was Charles Stross's Palimpsest, which actually begins, you have to join this time police. And it actually begins, the initiation is that you actually have to kill your own grandfather. The problem is that it's in media, it's not really done very well. I think it was actually done to really brilliant effect in Terry Gilliam's 12 Monkeys. It was done very well by Futurama. But they're able to handle this kind of irreverent sort of thing. Most of it hasn't. You don't see it a lot anymore in SF. You do see it a lot in romance these days. Time travel romances are huge.
Why?
I blame the Outlander series.
It's romantic.
What was that, Gail?
The Outlander series by Diana Gabaldon. It was huge. What? 15, 16, 17 years ago, the first book, it just skyrocketed, and she's a major, major, major bestseller. And she kind of rebooted the time travel and the romance genre, much in the way that the Owl books kind of rebooted a whole new, you know, prehistory romance erotica genre. So, you know, like after her books did so well, they sort of, there's been a lot of similar stuff.
Paul, you mentioned Doctor Who, and I think everybody listening knows that I'm a slight Doctor Who fan, but you talk about clever time travel, and the past few seasons have been very clever, but my problem with the last few seasons is I feel like Moffat is doing clever just to say, hey, look at me, I'm being clever.
I concur with you. I think there can be a line where you go from clever in service of a story to clever just for the sake of being clever. Like Blink, for example, is a very good Doctor Who episode, which is clever, but it's not just clever for the sake of being clever. But or to go back to the original series, Day of the Daleks, which has a nice stable time loop and is one of the best Doctor Who episodes, period. But clever for the sake of being clever, yeah, Moffat does seem to be veering into that lately. I will not disagree with you.
Gail mentioned, I think you mentioned a favorite book.
Yeah, it's definitely one of my favorites, sure.
John, what about you? Do you have a favorite time travel story?
I have a whole list of them, as a matter of fact. And to maybe extend a little on what Paul said, I think there's at least two ways to approach time travel stories. One is as a convenient plot device to get one character, you know, the fish out of water story, right? Where one character goes into the future, into the past, and that's the extent of the time travel. There's another type of story that kind of addresses the time paradox head on and has to deal with, you know, changing the past and, you know, killing your grandfather and all that fun stuff, which in that second type tends to be more enjoyable for me. It's where the authors don't really evade the paradox, but they just, you know, wade right into it.
Yeah.
So that said, I think listing some of my favorite books of time travel, which I think is one of my favorite subgenres of science fiction, I have to start with The Time Machine by H.G. Wells, which interesting in that when I first read it, I just didn't like it at all. And then a couple of years later, I gave it another go and I just thought, wow, this is just fantastic. And really like The Time Machine. Stephen Baxter did a sequel of it years later called The Time Ships, which is also very good. Asimov's End of Eternity, Heinlein's Door into Summer, also very good novels. Paul Anderson did a series of Time Patrol stories, basically an early version of Time Cop, right? David Gerrold did a book called The Man Who Folded Himself. What's interesting about this is the guy who gets the time belt doesn't just go back and forth in time, but he begins to see kind of the landscape of the time travel because he's interacting with multiple versions of himself from different time periods, and you know they all have this predetermined place where they go and play poker. It's kind of interesting. One of the early time stories I ever read was Millennium by John Varley, which was based on a short story called Air Raid. The premise of this being that people from this this dystopian future where basically the population is dying off because of pollution and whatnot, they troll the past for healthy bodies to repopulate the humanity on another planet.
And wasn't that the premise of the movie Millennium?
Yeah, yes, it was based on that story. Movie, not so good. The book was awesome. Tim Powers' The Anubis Gates, also excellent. Connie Willis, to say nothing of The Dog. Jack McDevitt did a book based on his short story called Time Travelers Never Die. Paul Levinson did a book called The Plot to Save Socrates, also very good. And, of course, Cage Baker's Company stories are very good as well. I have a bunch of a couple of anthologies and short stories to mention, but I'll let someone else go.
Carrie, do you have any favorites?
Actually, I do. I really don't want to be known from this this podcast for having recommended Time Traveler's Wife. It's a good book, but it's not my favorite. But I did want to say, as far as time travel stories within the last 5 years, I'd really recommend 2008 Time Machines Repaired While You Wait. It's a really great little Canadian book. It won the Aurelis Award, was on the Philip K. Dick list for that year. And it's basically about a guy who... He's living in a world where time travel is possible, but he's not one of those lucky people who gets to do it. He's the schlub that fixes machines that are broken. And
K.D. Wentworth, is that?
No, it's K.A. Bedford.
Okay. I heard really good things about that one.
Yeah, and he just sort of gets sucked into this murder mystery by, you know, being the guy that was on the bottom of the totem pole and ends up, you know, having time travel and all those adventures, but it's a nice crisp book. As far as other stories that I would recommend, I think something that's important to remember with time travel stories is that there's a couple of different kinds. You've got the time travel machine where you control it, you go back and forth, whatever you're going to do with it, but it's this like piece of technology that you build to travel through time. Then there's the accidental time travel. You open the wrong door, you have some sort of disorder that makes you jump through time, whatever. That's, you can't control it. You go back and forth, and the character doesn't have any control over where they show up or what happens to them. But the other one that I would say is anything involving, like, cryosleep, that's a time travel story. You go to sleep at one time, and you wake up in another time far in the future, and it's still the same fish out of water story, but you can't go back. There's no return on that time travel trip. And so for that, I have to say A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. It's a classic.
It is. Derek, are you going to go with Bill and Ted or Marty and Doc?
I'm actually going to go with Bill and Ted. I actually find Marty Marty's a pretty vacuous mother. Actually, I'll also say as a companion piece to Connecticut Yankee and King Arthur's Court, L. Sprague de Camp's Lest Darkness Fall, which is it's an amazing golden age tale. John covered a good deal of them, and one of the things I was ruminating on was that there aren't many cyberpunks who ever tried time travel. The only two I can think of right off the bat were Mozart and Mirror Shades by Lou Scheiner and Bruce Sterling, and Twilight Time by Lou Scheiner. They're both really good tales, and it sort of spawned or influenced John Kessel and the concept of the moment universe when he wrote Corrupting Dr. Nice. Additionally, I'd recommend Kurt Vonnegut's Slaughterhouse-Five, which is a time travel tale. Billy Pilgrim has come unstuck in time. I think that's the first line, if I'm not mistaken. And you have this schlub who travels backwards and forwards, has no control over when he does it, but as a consequence, he pretty much has to roll with not only watching the bombing of Dresden, but also having to be captured by aliens and just seeing this as a natural occurrence. He's very passive about it.
Did anyone ever notice that Bill and Ted were traveling through time in a phone box?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And truth be told, hey, the Time Lords is a way cooler phone box.
Gail.
Yes. I was just thinking that perhaps we no longer have time travel because there are no more public telephones. but that's a whole different saga. I have, in addition to the Jenny Wirtz, I have a couple, and I am deviant, I think, in that I tend to dislike the classics, although I suppose I have one exception to that. I really started reading sci-fi and fantasy in the 80s, so I wasn't really interested in anything published before that. But so I'm going to say two of my favorite books, which are Anne Maxwell's Time Shadow, which is sort of a classic, atmospheric, far future sci-fi book with multiple characters, but that really sort of just plays with the concept of time and how time can be affected. And sort of one of the quasi characters in it is a sort of slipstream kind of creature. So that's one of my all time favorite books. And then The Fire Sword by Andrea Martin Barnes, which is the first of a series, but it begins with a woman taken out of our time into a sort of alternate medieval time. And so I really like that one. And then Robin McKinley has a great YA short story set in her Damar world, which is a desert world, but it is somebody taken from a sort of Victorian England time period and taken sort of across time and space into this desert nomad world. And it's cool because it's sort of a... the history of one of the main characters in her really well-known Blue Sword book. So those are kind of my, that's in the Water anthology. But anyway, those are sort of three of my very favorites. And then, of course, I have a bunch of Star Trek episodes and things like that that I love.
Did someone just bark?
It was either a bark or a sneeze.
I'm sorry. That would be my roommate, Stashend.
Oh, okay. Star Trek did a lot of time travel. It feels like, you know, once they figured out that all you had to do was slingshot around the sun, boom, time travel became a huge big thing.
Well, I'm talking about the Next Generation, please.
Oh, okay. Well, now, what about? I know you're into Next Generation, but what about the very classic episode of Star Trek with the Guardian of Forever?
Well, that's kind of one of the first classic Star Trek playing with time things that started them all, absolutely. But my all-time favorite is yesterday's Enterprise, mm-hmm. which I think it's just a very, very simple premise, that particular episode, which is, you know, the classic, what if one intrusion onto our timeline changed everything? But I think it's very sort of elegantly dealt with. And I think that's one of my all-time favorites.
And does everybody know what that episode's about?
Mm-hmm. I there's only one Trek as far as I'm concerned.
That's a whole different podcast.
The Yesterday's Enterprise is a great episode. Except for the fact that it did set up the whole Tasha Yar is taken to Romulus and has a baby, and the baby grows up to look exactly like Tasha Yar, and that just made me want to barf.
Denise Crosby would be a reason to go to Romulus, though. I'll say that.
Even Denise Crosby regrets that storyline at this point. Who hasn't done it well? You know, we've talked a lot about who's done good time travel stories. Who hasn't done it well? Who's written a time travel story or what time travel episode or series or story that just bugged the crap out of you, John?
Oh, I can't think of any that have. Maybe I just tend to remember the better ones. But I'm hard pressed to think of a bad story or a bad written story or a bad TV episode, unless someone can jog my memory.
Derek? On Netflix Instant Watch, there is a movie called Time Rider, The Adventures of Lyle Swan.
There's some things you just know are bad and you avoid, right?
Hey, you know, but this played on cable all the time when I was in my teens. And my God, is it a turgid piece of cheese.
What was the Crichton novel that they made a movie out of?
Timeline.
I did not care for that at all.
Was that the one with Jared Butler in it? Really young?
Yes, I think it is.
One that he's in. It's like Scotland or something.
I think that's it.
The movie version of A Sound of Thunder. Oh, bad, bad, bad.
Well, I even tried to read the Timeline novel, and I thought the novel wasn't that great.
Yeah.
So, how about Terra Nova? That's kind of weak.
Well, that's the other thing I was going to... Has anybody watched Terra Nova? This is the new Fox show that they spent millions of dollars on and promoting, and it's not that great. I don't think. Carrie?
No, I have to say, I started watching it because I like dinosaurs. That's really the reason that I watched it. And then I was like, oh, it's, you know, it's got this dystopian future, and there's going to be, like, criminal things going on. But the show can't decide what it wants to be. Is it a kid's show for kids to look at dinosaurs and be like, yay, dinosaurs? Is it a show for grown-ups where there's like cheating wives and like danger and murder and things like that? Or, you know, what is it? And until it figures out what it is, it's really in danger of getting canceled.
Yeah. Paul?
I haven't seen Terra Nova. I've heard the same things that Carrie has expressed, that it just seems to be too many things at once and no clear vision and just a muddled mess. So I'm not going to bother with it.
If you were going to watch it for dinosaurs, you know, the way Carrie was saying, oh gosh, dinosaurs, you would watch the first episode and then you'd be done. Because they haven't really done much else with dinosaurs. John?
Really?
Yeah, I mean, if you want dinosaurs, watch Primeval.
Oh, that's a great show.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, that's about time travel too.
Kind of, sort of. Alternate history, yeah.
Yeah, they go back and forth and things like that. But yeah, Primeval is definitely a much better dinosaur show.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I mean, it's not Shakespeare. It's not like super huge heady, but it's a fun show. John, anyway, I was going to ask you about Terra Nova.
Yeah, pretty much the same thing. I watched the first few episodes. It looked promising at the start, but it looked promising until they actually went back in time, right? So the first half hour or whatever before they actually went back in time, I was like, oh, this is kind of this cool future. Of course, we're not going to see it much, but whatever.
Wait, it's supposed to still be there. It's an alternate history. So yeah, 2149 whatever. Is still there.
Well,
and they can communicate with it.
I think they intimated that they told people it's an alternate history, so they wouldn't be afraid of changing the past. But then didn't they hint that it is the same timeline, and they're trying to change the future?
Right. There's the thing about the military leader's son went crazy and left and scrawled all these mathematical formulas on rocks, which we're supposed to sort of assume means that he knows something about the timeline that no one else does.
Yeah, I think they're being lied to. There's that intrigue part, right? Aside from they got the soap opera, the adventure, and then the intrigue part of it, right?
So Gail, have you seen Terra Nova?
Unfortunately, I don't really watch television, so no. And I gave up on Fox. Kind of Firefly was sort of the last straw for me, so I haven't really watched anything that they've done since. And I'm not going to start with this one, not from what I hear. I hear the writing is also really, really badly. And if I can start predicting dialogue in anything, television or movie, I either throw things at the screen or walk out. So I hear this one is one of those.
Well, speaking of movies, I mostly come into time travel from a literary point of view. But I have to say, Primer is an amazing movie. It's like this low-budget indie movie about time travel, 2004. Brilliant. And I mean brilliant to the point that you've got to watch it more than once to figure out exactly what everyone is saying. Because it's really smart the way that it's written and the way that the science is put together. It's a creepy movie. It makes you want to turn the TV off and not watch anything else again for days. But it's brilliant. I loved it.
Additionally, it's a great movie. And there was actually somebody had posted a timeline just to show where all the characters go back and forth and how you follow that, and it looks like a mound of spaghetti. I have enormous respect for not just for Primer, but for anybody who tries to map out all of the timelines for each of these characters. Just amazing.
So yeah, another lesser known film that was excellent is called Time Crimes, which is has English subtitles, was fascinating. I really, really enjoyed that one.
I can't believe that no one has mentioned Time Bandits.
Time Bandits.
Hey, Gail, any chances that Alexia is going to be traveling back in time to like ancient Greece?
No.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry.
We can't forget, go ahead, Gail.
I was just going to say, the archaeologist in me has a real difficult time trying to intellectualize and then write about time travel, because I think in terms of not only the sort of events that might have been changed, but all the objects that have been produced that would have been altered, and the reverberating ripple effect is totally overwhelming. I think I would find it pretty impossible to write about.
Hmm. Yeah. Nobody's mentioned Time After Time either, which was directed by Nicholas Meyer, where H.G. Wells actually invents the time machine, but Jack the Ripper is the first person to actually use it.
Yep, I remember that. That was a good movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was a great movie. That was set in San Francisco, I think.
San Francisco in the late 70s, yeah.
Well, let's see. We talked about time travel stories. We talked about what the favorites and which ones have done well and which one weren't. The only other thing I wanted to throw out there is it seems like, to me at least, an overused trope would be fixing things. You're traveling through time to fix things. Doctor Who fixes things. He saves people. Quantum Leap, Sam fixes things. He saves people. Time tunnels, kind of the same thing. Voyagers, the same thing. You know, it's about fixing. What is this? But, however, we can't kill Hitler, apparently, on Doctor Who. Because Rory had to put him in the cupboard.
That was the beauty of it. That was a red herring, right? Let's kill the title.
I will say that is my favorite line from Doctor Who right now.
Or a MacGuffin?
And I don't know if Gail, I know you don't watch a lot of television. Essentially, someone hijacks the Doctor in the TARDIS and makes him go to Germany to kill Hitler. And then they don't kill Hitler. And he just orders, he knocks Hitler out and orders Rory to put Hitler in the cupboard. And it all happens in like the first 5 minutes of the show, of the episode.
Right, but it was an excuse for all the events that all the events of the previous episodes were leading up to this.
Yes,
these particular events that happened in this episode, and the "Let's Kill Hitler" title of the episode was just a diversion. It was just a MacGuffin, right? It was beautiful. Yeah. I loved it. Great episode.
but I
was just gonna throw out the idea. You know, you were talking about fixing things. I think time tourism has also been done to death. It was actually pretty cool in Robert Silverberg's Up the Line, where you had to try to figure out how to get all these time travelers around the crucifixion. But it seems like that's used an awful lot these days.
Hey, speaking of classic sci-fi, I've got a list of more good stories if you want to hear them.
Yep, just in 1 second. What I wanted to throw out was, when they're fixing things, it's usually, just like with Doctor Who, they can't fix big, major things. So for example, when Sam on Quantum Leap, he leapt into a Lee Harvey Oswald, and he kept trying to save Kennedy. That was what he really wanted to do, and time kept stopping him. And it was this massive 2-hour episode. Al was trying to keep him from giving up secrets to the Russians when he was in Lee Harvey Oswald, but it wasn't working. And Oswald was doing it and giving up secrets, and all this kind of stuff happened. And then in the end, he leaps into one of the Secret Service agents just as the gunfire goes off, and he cannot save Kennedy. And at the very end, he's standing there and he's like, "But Al, I failed. You know, I tried to save Kennedy. I tried so hard to save him, and I couldn't do it." And Al looks at him and says, "But Sam, you saved Jackie." And in the original timeline, according to Quantum Leap, both Kennedys were killed. Mr. and Mrs. Kennedy were killed by the sniper. And that just tripped me out. That made me go, "Oh, okay, that's cool. That's different. Gotcha." Anyway. John.
And just as an aside, just real quickly as an aside, Stephen King's new novel comes out next week, and I think it's a Kennedy assassination time travel novel.
What would you do if you can go back in time and prevent Kennedy's assassination? It's called 11/22/63.
Right.
Did anyone see that episode of Red Dwarf where they had the problem with Kennedy?
No.
Okay, I loved it. All right, so what happens is that the crew from The Red Dwarf, which is this British sci-fi long-running TV show about sort of being stuck in the future, and they run out of Indian curry. They go back in time. They inadvertently end up knocking Oswald out of the window so that he can't shoot Kennedy. Well, then a couple of years later, Kennedy is still alive. He's been caught sharing a mistress with a mob boss. He hasn't done any of the great things that he did in our timeline. He ends up being kind of a bad guy and gets arrested, and they come to him and they say, "Look, you have a choice. You can have this life, or you can come with us, and you can be the guy that kills you, and you can be remembered as a hero." And that's what happens. The Kennedy goes back and kills himself.
Okay.
It
goes back to that idea that we have our history a certain way, even with the bad things in it, the wars and Hitler and all of that. We want to keep it the way that it was because we want to still be here at the end of it. So no matter what happens or who lives or who gets saved, we're willing to go back and kill people to make sure that doesn't happen that way.
Interesting point. Derek, you had a side?
No, I was just curious if the guys in Red Dwarf wound up getting the Indian curry after all.
No, actually not at the end of that episode.
Yeah.
It was okay. Very sad.
So John, you had some more stories you wanted to share real quick.
I did, but first a question. Did anyone, nobody mentioned this, but did anyone read Connie Willis's Blackout and All Clear?
They're on my shelf. I haven't read them yet.
Oh, there's a recent one, too. I was going to mention, there's lots of time travel short story anthologies, but two that I read that I thought were worthwhile were one is as the best time travel stories of all time by Barry and Maltzberg. The standout story in there was Hawksbill Station by Robert Silverberg. Great story. Basically, an oppressive government uses a time machine for deporting political prisoners into the way distant past where they won't do any damage. Other good stories in that anthology were Three Rooms, Good View by Karen Haber. Jack McDevitt's Time Travelers Never Die, the original story that he later expanded into a novel. Brooklyn Project by William Penn. All of Mirrors by Frederick Brown. Ripples in the Dirac Sea by Jeffrey A. Landis. On the Nature of Time by Bill Pronzini and Maltzberg. And The Battle of Long Island by Nancy Kress. All very good stories in that one anthology. Another very good anthology was Time Machines, edited by Bill Adler Jr. The standout story there being Firewatch by Connie Willis, which was an excellent story around the London bombings. Jack Finney had a good story in there called The Third Level. Mark Clifton had a story called Star Bright, Star, comma, Bright. Molly Brown wrote a great story called Bad Timing. There's a story called You See But You Do Not Observe by Robert J. Sawyer, and also The Last Article by Harry Turtledove. And then some stories not attached to any particular anthology that I really enjoyed were The Man Who Came Early by Paul Anderson, Behold the Man by Michael Moorcock, where a man travels back in a time machine to hoping to meet Jesus. Excellent story, and one of the sci-fi masterworks books. And then probably one of my favorite time travel short stories of all time was All You Zombies by Robert A. Heinlein, which was just mind warping and a must read.
So I'm gonna go down the list. I want to do final thoughts. Everybody on final thoughts on time travel, but I'm also going to throw a question out to you. So if you could time travel, I'm waiting for Derek. If you could time travel and speak to any person in history for 10 minutes, who would that person be? So that's your question plus final thoughts.
Wait.
Yep.
Here.
Yep.
Do we speak the same language, or do we have to speak somebody that we speak their language?
You have a universal translator courtesy of Star Trek.
Okay.
Derek.
Final thought would be, I enjoy a lot of the time travel stories. I'm kicking myself for not remembering Behold the Man. I don't know how that happened. Who would I talk to? Frankly, John Lennon.
That's a good choice. But what's the movie with the ship, the big battleship, and it goes starts bouncing through time?
Philadelphia Experiment?
The Final Countdown.
Final Countdown, oh. That's the one. No, don't get that stuck in my head. Gail.
Okay, so to answer your question, this is one of the meanest questions you can give to an archaeologist. I have to pick someone in ancient Etruria just because we know so little about the culture, so sort of the opportunity to kind of interview anybody from that culture would be really, really useful.
So the ancient what?
What's that?
Ancient what?
Etruria, Etruscan.
Oh, yeah.
Etruscan.
Yes.
And then if I have to pick a specific person, I'd go with somebody like Queen Hatshepsut or someone interesting like that. Some power, like a Zenobia, like a super powerful queen of the ancient world. Because I think, you know, a woman in power in the past would be a really interesting interview. Mm-hmm. And then my final thought is that we've neatly avoided talking about one of my favorite classic time travel stories, which is sort of reverse time travel. It's somebody out of the past brought into the present. And that's Isaac Asimov's The Ugly Little Boy. So,
good one.
Yeah.
Final thoughts. And also, I do think that one of the current writers writing today who plays with time travel and has the most fun with it and makes it funny is Jasper Fjord, who has time travel isn't the main center of his books, but there's certainly sort of a lot of time travel elements and sort of confused time travelers showing up and then disappearing again and things like that. So that's my final thoughts.
When I was in high school, I was obsessed with Herculaneum. And I read all sorts of books about that place. I only throw that out there because of the archaeology thing.
Have you been?
I've never been, no, but my teacher had.
Oh, if you ever have a chance, I've been to both Herculaneum and Pompeii, and I think Herculaneum is better because it's better excavated, and it's better preserved, and it's easy to see in a day, whereas Pompeii is sort of overwhelming, but it's amazingly fascinating, the sort of frozen in time concept, and unfortunately so totally unusual for archaeologists. But
if you can't afford that trip, I suggest the Getty Museum in LA, which is a replica of a Roman villa, which is kind of cool. Or if you just want to look at Roman Greco art, it's also cool there. Also is the Palace of Legion of Honor in San Francisco. Has a nice collection. Paul, final thoughts.
Couple of books and stories that no one mentioned yet. The Chronoliths by Robert Charles Wilson, where monoliths depicting a victory from an emperor from the future start appearing into the present. I really thought that was a really good story. One of my favorite going forward into the future stories was Poul Anderson's Flight into Forever, which was kind of redone by Haldeman as the accidental time machine, but I think the Poul Anderson story is better. And to answer your question, now you already sort of kind of stole my thunder a little bit. I'd like to talk to the Emperor Hadrian circa early 2nd century AD to get a real perspective on the Roman Empire from someone at the top, as Gail said.
Very cool. Carrie.
Yes. Oh, okay. So if I was...
Oh, what are we doing? Are we doing a podcast?
just for a moment there. Okay. So basically, if I was going to go back in time and talk to anybody, my longstanding wish has always been to talk to Jesus. I really want to know what that guy had in mind.
Very cool. John?
No closing thoughts, really. But if I could go back in time and talk to any one person, it would probably be myself 1 week in the past. So I can warn myself that you were going to ask me this question and have a better answer to it.
Then you're creating a time paradox loop.
I was going to say that's going to be an infinite loop, I'm afraid.
Absolutely. I can't believe no one mentioned Planet of the Apes.
You try not to.
Yeah.
Those are fighting words.
Oh, spoiler. is it still a spoiler?
Yeah, 40 years plus, I'm thinking not so much anymore.
You maniacs.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for coming on. Appreciate it.
Thanks Patrick.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.